The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Good morning. Welcome. Merry Impeachmas. Oh, wait, that was last week. How about Merry Snowmas? Did you expect this much snow this morning? Yesterday morning, filling in for Peter Boyles, it was definitely predicted we'd have a little snow today. I didn't expect to wake up. Cars covered, slow-moving traffic. But hey, what the heck. 'Tis a privilege to live in Colorado. We love it. And it's so good to have you along for this special second half of Wake Up with Randy Corcoran. I am Randy Corcoran, in from 9 to 12 today. And it was just fascinating on the way in to the studio listening to my old friend Rob Nadelson talking about the impeachment scam. And we're going to spend a little bit of time on that this morning, but I want to give you a lineup for the show today. This was one of those days, you know, last Wake Up with Randy Corcoran of the year. And I had reached out over the holiday week to get a couple of special guests lined up. And, you know, you don't hear back from people for a while. And then all of a sudden, boom, 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 you're hearing from everybody. And I thought, gosh, there's so much to talk about here at the end of the year. How much time do I want to spend with guests? So I've pared it down to three. And there are three great guests. I'm not going to keep them too long because there is a great deal of goings on here locally around town with a recent court ruling from a Denver district judge on the camping ban. District of Denver County Court judge on the camping ban. The Denver Library has decided that we're not going to fine people anymore if they don't bring their books back because it discourages them from coming back to the library. And just a whole host of stupidity that some of which I am dialed into, and I'll explain that in a couple of minutes. And so I just don't want to get too sidetracked with guests, but we've got some great ones, and you're going to want to stick around for them. 11 o'clock, the founder of the Walk Away movement, Brandon Straka. I made my first connection with this guy back when the Walk Away movement was in its infancy, when he had just come out from having an epiphany in his life that he'd been voting Democrat, hating Republicans, a young gay hairdresser in New York City. What else could he believe? Until he got some reality checking by the world that was going on around him, and he realized he'd been being lied to, and he created this video about why he was walking away from the angry, misleading, wrong-headed, taking the country the wrong direction, Democrat Party, joining the Republican Party. And that thing went viral. And since then, it has turned into literally a movement all around the country. He spent some time very recently with the President of the United States. He's going to check in with us in the 11 o'clock hour. Next hour, really glad. I just heard from him late last night, and I thought, you know what? We've got to squeeze him in. Has it become a dear friend? Evangelical Christian, former nationally syndicated talk show host, still does a TV program on conservativereview.com. I guess it's Blaze TV now, associated with the Mark Levin Network. Great author. First book of his that I read was How Rules for Conservatives and How We Can... there's a couple of books out there with that title. Anyway, it's Rules for Conservatives, How We Can Win Again. It's kind of dated now, but we'll check in and see what his prognostications at that time, what it would take for Republicans to actually win, how that's played out over the course of the last 5 or 6 years. But he always has a great take, always grounded in his faith. And though he has not been a fan of the president, don't even know if he voted for the president, be very, very interesting to see what he thinks about the performance of the president so far. But the thing that I want to get into here in about 15 minutes is something, a story that I just came across yesterday while filling in for on the Peter Boyle show. Might have been through a tweet or some other internet searching that I was doing, but I found a news clip from Overland Park, Kansas, back in May. And Overland Park is where my cousin and his grandson were murdered 5.5 years ago, a little over that now, by a white supremacist, an evil, vile, sick, disgusting, ugly, unwell human being who unfortunately will die of his illnesses and age long before the state will have an opportunity to execute him. He was given the death penalty, thank God. But this story was about a mosque, a Muslim center, an Islamic center that is going up, or at least the Overland Park City Council has approved it, had given it preliminary approval last May, right there in Overland Park. And, you know, the funeral for my cousin and his grandson, thousands, literally thousands of people showed up at this mega church that, from what I could tell, trying to kind of guess at the location of this Islamic center, within several miles. And it's what drew me closer and closer and closer into this story was the fact that the link that was attached to whatever it was that brought this story to my attention pointed to a fundraiser next month, January 20th, I think, in Overland Park. Keynote speaker, Linda Sarsour, supporter of Hamas, supporter of CARE, the worst of Islam, is coming to Overland Park, Kansas, where my beloved cousin and his grandson were murdered 5.5 years ago. And so got me doing some digging. And some of what I have found, the Islamic center in Kansas that was opened up just days after 9/11, the kind of foundational papers that describe their mission here in the United States of America. And of course, the fact that if you are a mainstream media person or you are just a average American out there, a soccer mom, living your life, raising your kids, paying your mortgage, trying to advance in your career, and not paying close attention, all you know about people that speak out against the reality of literal Islam. People love to say radical Islam. I like to use the phrase, and have tried to stay in the habit of using the phrase, literal Islam. Those people mean us harm. And I believe I will effectively prove it to you at 9:25 with my good friend Robert Spencer from Jihad Watch. He will join us. And as I said, with so many local stories and so much happening, we're going to keep the guests kind of short today. Try and get in a lot of calls as well. 303-696-1971, 303-696-1971. It is the end of the year version of Wake Up with Randy Corcoran. So really anything that's on your mind, we can bounce around today. I don't mind a bit. All the ways to follow me, man, I am getting close to 5,000 followers on Twitter. I don't know what kind of a landmark that is. That's I look at the president's Twitter feed. I think he's about to cross over 68 million or maybe 69 million. But the utility of social media, especially for, you know, the average listener to someone like me, someone who leans right, believes in the Constitution, believes in God-given rights that are enshrined in our Bill of Rights, telling the government what it cannot do to infringe them. Who love economic freedom and the ability, I mean, the fact under this Trump economy that everyone is benefiting in a tremendous way, but especially for the first time in forever, first time since Barack Obama was president, first time since George W. Bush was president, the folks that are working their way up, the folks in the lower income areas have derived the most benefit. Their wages are going up in a big way as a percentage of their income in a huge way. Now, I get it. You know, the Denver Post has to, in their business section, talk about, I don't have the headline in front of me, but I saw it this morning. It was like $1.7 trillion went to the top 1% or, you know, something like that. It was a headline just like that. And it's always the focus of the media. Somebody like me who's going to bring to your attention this mosque, I'm an Islamophobe. people who are successful, the top 1% or 1/10 of 1% that have all of these billions or trillions of dollars, and how all this money goes to them, as though that's a bad thing. As though somehow the fact that some Bill Gates or Steve Jobs or the old guy in Nebraska, Buffett, who has made so much money playing the stock market so smartly, that somehow the fact that they have earned millions or billions or combined, you know, taken the top $1 trillion out of the gains in this incredible U.S. economy, the headlines and the way they talk about these stories, and especially the way the left brings it to your attention, is, oh my God, income inequality. Look at how unfair this is. You need us in the government to help balance this inequity. We'll tax those millionaires and billionaires at a higher rate, and then we'll redistribute their money that they earn through their ideas, their hard work. Not always, you know, can be ill-gotten sometimes. I get it. But that's not part of the point. That we in the government, the smart masterminds who plan so well, who have used, you know, the last half a century to try and bring the people in the black community out of poverty, the great society. We see how all that garbage works. It doesn't. That they're going to take somebody else's money, redistribute it to you, and try and equalize the playing field by bringing everybody down. We're not trying to push everybody up to a higher level. We just try and bring everybody down to an average level where we can all just get along. But the point that is never made, and the argument that is that you almost never hear, is that it doesn't matter how much money somebody else has made. Because we don't just have a pot of money. We don't just say, hey, there are $10 trillion available in the world to divide up among 7 billion people or whatever the population is up to now. And so if somebody's got, you know, 100 billion, then that money is not available to everybody else. This is a infinite pot. The person with the best idea, the person with the best service can create a market, can create interest in what they do or what they sell, and the money will come. Because as that person builds up his or her business, and then more people interact with that business, and the entrepreneur hires more people, pays more in taxes. If they start making a lot of money, unless they stick it under their mattress, it goes into the bank, where the bank can then reloan it to people who want to buy cars or buy houses, or it goes into the stock market, where another, a large company can grow, and we all benefit from that if we're invested in any way, in your 401k, your IRA, or whatever. It is not an infinite pot of money. But the left, they're so weak in ideas and so strong in strategy that that they find the argument. They find the sweet spot. They try and touch your heart because we're all fair-minded people. Not everybody, but you know what I mean. In general, we're fair-minded. Americans, as I heard Deborah Flora talking about, are the most generous society in the history of the world when it comes to charity within and without our country. So it's so easy for them to propagandize us, propagandize you, and they're propagandizing the heck out of our young people. Very, very frustrating. And so that really is the fight as we head into 2020, is we have got to get the word out. Number one, take the page one out of the Donald Trump school of political victories and be in people's faces, but not in a jerky way, not in an angry way. We can certainly defend ourselves when we need to, but in a persuasive way, in an all-encompassing way. And indicate to people that you are not hurt by somebody else's success. You are blessed by it, and you have the same opportunity that they do. Or that it is not Islamophobic or hateful to be exposing the truth about the Islamic Society of Kansas City that we'll be talking about in just a few minutes with Robert Spencer. These are things that people need to know. It is not anti-illegal alien, or as the left likes to say, anti-undocumented immigrant, to want to secure our borders and make sure that we're taking care of our own business, like in San Francisco and other places in California, but wherever. And then bring people in based on merit. Certainly bring people in based on need in certain circumstances. But we are not the food stamp delivery service for the world here in the United States, because eventually we too will crumble. And it would be ridiculous to put the United States in a position where instead of doing all this good with so many people around the world and within our own borders, that all of a sudden we're just another nation just struggling to get along and looking for the next handout or whatever. All of these things need to be pounded on and you know, find that simple, heart-tugging way to grab people's attention and get them to think about life a little differently than the left and their acolytes in the media have so successfully groomed them to think for so long. I'm sure that if you're paying any attention, even to, what's his name? The vicious, ugly, cursing guy on HBO, Bill Maher. If you listen to even radical leftist filmmaker Michael Moore, everybody knows what's going to happen in the 2020 election.
Here, can I just make a serious point?
Yes.
In The Handmaid's Tale.
Oh, geez.
The best part, Bill, let me just tell you this. This is a serious point. The best part of the show are the flashbacks where she tries to figure out where was the point when it was too late.
Right.
Where was the point where if we had all just risen up?
Right.
If we'd just done something, but because it happens in little increments.
That's right. That's how fascism works.
That's how fascism works.
They do it in little.
And listen, we have a president.
We lose one norm a week.
We have a president who, by the way, was not elected by the people and constantly refers to himself.
Yes.
Constantly. He's referring to himself in the Third Reich.
See, two things they did there. Not elected by the people, he was. He was elected in the constitutionally mandated way for all elections, the Electoral College, which equalizes and takes away the absolute mandates that New York and Los Angeles and Chicago or Detroit or other main cities would have if we just had a popular vote. And then instead of talking about Trump referring to himself in the third person, they toss in the Third Reich. You heard Bill Maher talk about, we lose a norm a week. Yeah, if the norms were the last 8 years of the Obama administration, I'm okay with that. But before we get to the break or any calls or anything, just hear this prediction by Michael Moore.
And
now, you and I were on this page before anybody else, that he was serious about running and that he absolutely could run and probably would.
Maybe they will listen to us. No, they didn't listen before.
They're not going.
But seriously, they have to listen. People, where are you? You have to listen this time because he is going to win the 2020 election.
Even if he doesn't, he's not going to leave.
And he's not,
there's another one.
You have to understand.
He will leave after the second term if he doesn't have to, and nobody stops him. This man believes in being president for life.
Yes.
He said a few weeks ago, Roosevelt got four terms. Why can't I?
Yes.
Go down the hole.
Playing the media like crazy.
President Kim.
He's hot for dictators, baby.
He loves the dictators. And I'm telling you, my friends, if we don't stop it now, you'll look back at the show where we were all goofing around talking about The Handmaid's Tale, but this is the moment.
This is the moment. Yeah, and Michael Moore predicted it a year before the election as well of 2016. He's predicting it again now, and listen to how they talk. They just try to throw out all of those memes, all of those identifiers for the president of the United States. They're not talking about why Republican and presidential policies are going to be bad for the country and the Democrats will be better. It's all this indoctrination game, and they are so very good at it. Before I know, we've got full lines, and I'm sorry to the callers. We've got a guest on the other side. I would encourage that you just hang up right now. Call back at in about 15 minutes, and then we'll do calls. I'm only going to keep Robert Spencer for a few short minutes because I do want to hear from everybody. 303-696-1971. 696-1971. But I want to tie this together with just this last minute. This is their strategy. This is all they have. They are so very good at it. Nancy Pelosi, a losing hand on impeachment. But even though she's in a sinking boat, man, they're ripping the wood off the side of the boat to hit you with. They're ripping the zippers off their life jackets to poke your eyes out. They are fighting with everything they have to continue to win this election. And listening to my buddy Rob Nadelson, who was on earlier with Deborah Flora, I got it. I now understand why the star witness for the Democrats in the judicial side of the impeachment hearings in the House went ahead and made the wrote the piece that the president isn't impeached unless Nancy Pelosi delivers the impeachment papers. He wanted to give this was not a good legal determination. He was giving her cover to do what she's doing right now, to withhold these impeachment articles. And I was so glad that Deb had Rob Nadelson on to clear that up and explain that the House has voted on articles of impeachment. The president is impeached. Mitch McConnell does not have to wait for Nancy to deliver a piece of paper. It exists, it's happening, and it is now in the Senate's hands. But this is how strategic these guys are on the left. I touted when the law professor came out and made his statement, like, okay, good. She's afraid to bring him over. Maybe he's not impeached after all. But now I get the strategy. These guys on the left, they are always looking 10 steps ahead. That's a game we've got to step up and into. All right, we do have to take the break. 9:22 on Wake Up with Randy Corcoran. Snowy day outside, cold. I'll give you the forecast on the other side. And we'll bring Robert Spencer on from Jihad Watch to talk about this story that is especially concerning for me, the big Muslim center going up, Linda Sarsour being brought in to fundraise for it. We'll look behind the scenes on that mess right there in the heartland, Overland Park, Kansas, when we come back. Let's Wake Up with Randy Corcoran, 710 KNUS.
Now, back to Wake Up with Randy Corcoran on News Talk 710 KNUS.
Wow, that one caught me off guard. I'm sitting here reading through all of the text messages. Good morning, Alexa. Happy New Year to you as well. Indeed, the last Wake Up with Randy Corcoran of the year. And we heard from Chuck in Tulsa celebrating Festivus in Oklahoma. And it looks like good old Dr. Marty is listening. We actually gave a shout-out from the Peter Boyle Show yesterday to the operating room where Dr. Marty was operating, because he texted me and said, "We got you on live in the operating room." So that was pretty cool. And thanks to everybody. Good morning. Happy New Year. The special part two edition of the 6-hour Wake Up with Randy Corcoran. So grateful to Deb Flora for coming in and doing the 6 to 9. And want to jump right to our great guest, Robert Spencer from Jihad Watch. Robert, good morning.
Good morning, Randy. How are you?
I am doing well. Happy New Year to you, sir. I don't want to forget in case we run out of time on the backside.
Yeah, Happy New Year.
I know you've got a new book coming out. I want to talk to you about it. My habit over the years now that I've been doing talk radio has usually been not to, you know, pre-arrange topics with guests. I don't call ahead or say, hey, I want to talk about this. I'll usually ask a guest, you know, if they have a new book or a movie or something that's going on. Obviously, we want to give them a few minutes to talk about that. But today I made an exception. I actually called you this morning on the way to the station because yesterday I found out about this Islamic center going up in Overland Park where my cousin and his grandson were murdered about 5.5 years ago. And, you know, we live in America. I am a believer in freedom of religion. And if there is a peaceful way to exercise Islam or a reformation of Islam, I am very, very supportive of that. And I would never call out the peaceful people who practice Islam here in Colorado or around the country, except to say when bad things happen or if you truly understand the fundamental precepts of your religion, you need to be pushing to change them. But setting all that aside, when I see that Linda Sarsour is going to be the keynote speaker at the fundraiser for the Hidayah Islamic Community Center in Overland Park in the heartland, I get very, very concerned. And that's why I wanted to bring you on. And so thank you very much for your time this morning.
Oh, thank you.
What is Hidayah? Yeah. What is Hidayah? Does that have any special meaning?
Hidayah is I know of Hidayah as a compendium of Islamic law, and it probably refers in some way to Sharia.
Okay. Sharia, the word that cannot be spoken. I read through some stories about this center going up, and only one story that was talking about it even used the word Sharia law, and then they identified the term, and then they condemned people for talking about it as though it was a bad thing. Explain to people again what Sharia law is.
Sharia is a comprehensive system of laws that are considered in Islamic theology to be the laws of Allah himself directly. And so they cannot be questioned, changed, reformed, altered in any way. And they are not just like the Ten Commandments of Judaism and Christianity, but are much more extensive. As a matter of fact, this is not me talking. You will find Muslim spokesmen bragging about this and saying that Sharia covers every aspect of life, whereas Christianity just offers vague precepts about how to behave properly, whereas there is a Sharia law for everything, and it's true, there is. There's a Sharia law for everything you can imagine doing as a human being, everything, without any exception. And that includes governments. That includes how a society should be ordered. And so when we're talking about Sharia, we can see what it's like from places where that is implemented, where those governmental precepts are implemented. Saudi Arabia, Iran, Sudan, Somalia, Pakistan for the most part, Iran, I believe I mentioned. In any case, they're all essentially the same in the way their societies are ordered. Women's rights are severely devalued. The freedom of speech is prohibited when it comes to criticism of Islam and other matters. And the Sharia states are all human rights basket cases. This is what Sharia is. This is what it's always been. If you look through history at Sharia states, if you look at all the Sharia states now, there's not a single one where non-Muslims enjoy equality of rights with Muslims or where women enjoy equality of rights with men.
This is how it works, too, isn't it? The last book of yours that I read, what was it, History of Jihad, I think, was the title?
Yeah, that's my book before the new one.
Okay. And what I learn, and you go back centuries and trace history, and part of what you describe is what happens when Islam comes into an area, comes into a community. When they are in the minority, then they live in peace, and they're humble, and they're quiet. And as their numbers begin to grow, as they get balanced, then they start putting themselves into positions of power. Once they become the majority in an area, then they take over. Sharia gets implemented. People, if they don't convert, are either killed or have to pay a tax. Elaborate on that a little bit, because when I look at when this Muslim Society of Kansas City was formed just two or three days after 9/11, and then see kind of the growth around the state of Kansas of all places, it seems like, you know, part of the long-term plan is being implemented right under our eyes.
Well, there is a concerted effort to bring Sharia to the United States piecemeal, and it's working great. Because in the first place, anybody who calls attention to it is vilified and defamed and called a racist and a bigot and all these things and marginalized. Now, the effort, meanwhile, to bring Sharia to the West is still happening and it's still pretty obvious. For example, take the Muhammad cartoons. And we know that it's been about 13 or 14 years since cartoons of Muhammad were first published in a Danish newspaper, and Muslims rioted all over the world. And in response to that, it has become taboo. As a matter of fact, in the wake of that controversy, even when there were discussions of that controversy itself, the people doing the discussing would not show the cartoon. And now the West takes it for granted. You just don't do this. Muslims will get angry. You don't make fun of Muhammad. You make fun of Jesus all you want, but don't make fun of Muhammad. Now, this is an indication of the acceptance of Sharia. Islamic law forbids criticism of Islam, Muhammad, the Quran, Allah, and so on. And for the West to have kowtowed to this is accepting Sharia blasphemy provision. But it's pretty much universal now. Nobody stood up and said, we have to defend the freedom of speech here. Instead, everybody just went in for Sharia.
And just to remind folks, or to inform folks who don't know, you and our friend Pamela Geller were almost murdered when you tried to expose the hypocrisy and the danger of being, you know, fearful of showing an image of Muhammad anywhere in Texas. and two jihadis armed up and came to Texas to get you. And they were being tailed by the FBI, but for a on-the-job Texan who was there running security, both of you could have been seriously injured or killed.
Sure. And this was because we were holding a Muhammad art contest and art exhibit and cartoon contest. And the thing is, a lot of people have said, well, that was nuts to do that. You're just provoking them. Well, okay. So the question is, do we kowtow then to violent bullying? And do we not do what they don't want us to do because they say they'll kill us if we will? If we do do it, or do we say we're going to stand up for the freedom of speech and defend those who are exercising it? The thing is, if you go ahead with this and say that it, freedom of speech can be restricted because Muslims will be violent, then you are just going to encourage more of that kind of violence because the jihadis in question are going to see that it works and see that they can get what they want from you if they threaten violence or behave violently. And so you're just going to get more of it. The only way you're going to stop that violent intimidation is to stand up to that violence. But nobody in the West wants to do that anymore.
New York Times bestselling author, Islamic scholar Robert Spencer is with us. You can follow him at, on Twitter at JihadWatchRS, or the website is JihadWatch. It's .org, isn't it?
Yes, that's
right. JihadWatch.org. This is the thing, is that Islam is not just a different way of worshiping the same God. You know, Islam, Muhammad, certainly, the biblical stories are tied together in many ways between Christianity and Islam. But this is not a different way of worshiping God or a choice to, you know, idolize or make as prophets different people, because Islam is a complete structure of social requirements, legal requirements, and religious requirements. So there's no way to separate those three facets in literal Islam, correct?
Yeah, that's right. It's a political and social system, but it's a unified whole. And there has never been an Islam in the world that has separated out the political from the religious. And there are states now that are majority Muslim that don't implement Islamic law, but that is something that is a result of Western influence in the Islamic world. And many Muslims in all of those states consider that the state has no legitimacy because it's not implementing Islamic law.
I didn't have any multiple ways to verify this, but the couple of sites that I visited indicated that this Muslim Society of Kansas was founded just several days after 9/11. The Muslim Society of America, one of their founding principles is to spread the word that Islam is a way of life, not a way to glory, not a way to salvation, not a choice for worshiping God, but they mean that literally. It's our way or the highway once they become powerful enough to enforce their Sharia law and all the other facets and precepts of Islam. What I'd like to do, I had thought I was going to keep this short with you, and I'd invited lots of folks to call after the break, but we're just not there yet. What I'd like to do is take a pause here so we can have a good segment with you on the other side, because Linda Sarsour is coming to be the keynote speaker to get money for this Muslim center. And I'd like you to give folks a little background about this, and then I don't know if you had any time after my call. Any other insights you have to what's going on right there in the heartland, Overland Park, Kansas? Will you stay with us through a break?
Sure.
All right, it's great. It's Robert Spencer. I'm Randy Corporan. 20 minutes to go until 10 o'clock. I will have that forecast for you on the other side. Stay with us at 710 KNUS.
Now, back to Wake Up with Randy Corporan on News Talk 710.
Again, apologies to the full lines at 9:45, 15 minutes to go until 10 o'clock. Have to continue with Robert Spencer for just a few more minutes. Not like that's a bad thing, but we just got to finish this story. And Robert, this, for people who are just joining us, Overland Park, Kansas, where my cousin, grandson were murdered 5.5 years ago, white supremacist, saw this story yesterday about a big Muslim center that has been approved by the city council several months ago. Now a huge fundraiser where they have invited Linda Sarsour as the keynote speaker January 20th, is what drew my attention to all of this. And I just want people to understand, from the U.S. v. Holy Land Foundation trial, where Kerr has been called and remains an unindicted co-conspirator, one of the documents that was produced out of that trial, an explanatory memorandum, and it's very short. I just want to read to folks what their own documents say about understanding the role of the Muslim brother in North America from the Muslim Brotherhood. The process of settlement is a, quote, civilization jihadist process, with all the word means. The Ikhwan must understand that their work in America is a kind of grand jihad in eliminating and destroying the Western civilization from within and, quote, sabotaging its miserable house. I don't know why these words are in quotes, but the whole thing I'm reading is right from the document. It's miserable, sabotaging its miserable house by their hands and the hands of the believers so that it is eliminated and God's religion is made victorious over all other religions. That's what we're up against, and people aren't paying any attention.
Yeah, absolutely. And Linda Sarsour is an exponent of this. This is one of the reasons why you see the far left allied with, or rather, Islamic supremacists like Linda Sarsour, Sharia supremacists. She's openly Sharia adherent, has defended Sharia. Why she allies with the left? Because it's a corrosive force in American politics that is driving the country apart and sowing division. And that, you know, you can say, well, maybe she has nothing to do with this program of eliminating and destroying Western civilization from within. All right. But if she does, how would she be, if she does or doesn't, how would she be acting any differently from how she is acting?
Well, absolutely. And this is the woman who headed up the Women's March against right after the Trump election. She's put out tweets that say things like Brigitte Gabriel, who I had on a couple of weeks ago, equals Ayaan Hirsi Ali. She's asking for an ASS whipping. I wish I could take their vaginas away. They don't deserve to be women. She is a radical and a rabble rouser, and she is closely connected to Care. And it's just shocking to me that the folks in the heartland, Overland Park, where people are just trying to live their lives, really haven't come out in outrage against her being any kind of a keynote speaker, even if people are okay with a Muslim center going up in their backyard.
Well, this is the thing. A lot of people are uninformed, indifferent, because they don't realize the implications of what's happening. And this is a prime example. The people who are not protesting the mosque are probably just thinking, well, it's just another church. And they don't care about the fact that it would have a speaker like this. It's just not a problem. And that is the difficulty, that a lot of people are very complacent and indifferent about these things when they should be standing up. The left, on the other hand, is very much on this kind of issue. Whenever there's a speaker that dissents from the leftist agenda and is speaking to a general audience and not just a right-wing audience, then they pounce and make it into a very big deal and try to force the hall that's holding the event to cancel and so on. And many times they're successful. But on the other side, we never do this. Nobody's ever thinking, wait a minute, this mosque is no doubt claiming to be moderate and to be loyal to American principles and not to Sharia, and therefore, why is it having this anti-Semitic Sharia supremacist speaking? And we ought to put pressure on them. Nobody would dare do that.
Yeah, just earlier this month, she said in an article, I think it was in The Nation, a pretty mainstream Democrat magazine or news site, Sarsour says Israel, quote, is built on the idea that Jews are supreme to everyone else. She's flat-out anti-Semitic. Her father was more closely invested and involved with Hamas than perhaps she is. But all of these ties exist. And, you know, to wrap up this part of our conversation, I want to give you a couple minutes to talk about your new book. But there's a mosque right up the street from the radio station. People peacefully file in and out of there for religious ceremonies. I've never heard a word, seen any kind of danger, you know, coming out of there. It's a very secure facility. It's video cameras everywhere. Up in Fort Collins, 65 miles to our north, is the, what at least when it was built, was the largest Muslim center west of the Mississippi. And frankly, it looks like a military fortress. It's got the slits in the side, you know, where rifle barrels could poke out. And it could just be a design thing. I understand it. If people want to somehow implement some peaceful way to worship God as a Muslim or under the precepts of Islam and take away the part where they have it's their way or the highway, then maybe we could have a conversation. Are there any people out there who are doing an effective job about exposing or at least bringing up the idea of a reformation of Islam?
No, because Islam is perfect. According to the Quran, chapter 5, verse 3, where Allah says, "This day I have perfected your religion for you." If it's perfect, then there's no fixing it. And genuine, sincere reformers in Islam are often targeted for being accused of heresy by other Muslims. And that can be lethal. So they generally don't say anything. And so... You have, on the one hand, Americans afraid to say anything because they don't want to be called Islamophobic, and genuine Muslim reformers don't not wanting to say anything because they are afraid of being killed, and so either way we lose.
Very, very concerning. Well, I'm assuming that your new book, The Palestinian Delusion, is not out yet because I don't have a copy. But
I'm sorry, you should have a copy. It is just out.
Okay.
I don't know why they didn't send you one, but I'll see about it.
All right.
And in any case, it is a comprehensive history of the Middle East peace process, an attempt to explain why all the negotiated settlements between Israel and the Palestinians have failed, and why they always will fail, and what must be done instead. And so that is, I tried to make it the most comprehensive guide to all the objections that you hear from leftists and Palestinian activists in regard to Israel.
Wonderful. I love this kind of tease about it. It teaches you how to answer virtually every propaganda lie about Israel and Arabs. And, you know, I'm sure you get into the two-state solution and some of the other garbage that's out there. So I want to encourage everybody to, especially since it's out now, and I'll look forward to reading it for sure. What is the best way for people to learn more about you, get tied into your work, and find out how to get this book?
Well, I'm at jihadwatch.org and jihadwatchrs on Twitter. And the book, The Palestinian Delusion, is at amazon.com, barnesandnoble.com, and it should be at any self-respecting bookstore.
Robert, I know you were ill for a while. You sound absolutely great, so I'm really excited to launch into 2020 with warriors like you available and on hand. Thank you so much for a good chunk of your time on this beautiful Saturday morning.
Thank you, Randy. You're always a pleasure.
All right. Take care. And it really is beautiful out there. It's the snow is just gorgeous. And hey, it's a weekend. You don't have to go to work, hopefully. Forecast-wise, 28 degrees will be the high today, 32 tomorrow. A great day to kick some Oakland Raiders behind in the final NFL Broncos game of the year. And we're not going to see a ton of warm-up. We may get to 43 by Tuesday or Wednesday, but at least we'll have some sun. And I know I've been delinquent in phone calls. We're going to take our break now, and then we will get all of these phone calls on the air. So I hope you'll stay with us. One line is open now at 303-696-1971. I'm Randy Corcoran at 710 KNUS.